Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, Anna.
Yes, hi, Amanda. How are you?
Hi, good. Thank you so much for joining me. So I'm going to go ahead and get started, and I'm going to give a brief intro, and then I'm going to ask you some questions and really learn about this great program that you're working with for the Basket Brigade. My name is Amanda Sacazzo. I am a certified life coach. I manage this radio channel, which is twice a month, the first and third Tuesday of the month, and that's beautiful from the inside out. So today we're taking a break from the regular program, so I can bring in Anna and basically talk about the great benefits of giving and the Basket Brigade. And it's just been an amazing program that she's working with and coordinating. And I want all the viewers to learn about that. So, Anna, I would love to hear a little bit about yourself.
My name's Anna. I live in Westchester County, and I have two children on a personal level, and I just became grandma for the first time 2 months ago, so that's exciting news.
Congratulations. And,
thank you. And then from the Basket Brigade point of view, I've been doing this for about 20 years, and we were doing it basically in the middle of the street. There was a person by the name of Ross who would organize it in Tuckahoe in Westchester. And he'd buy the supplies and try to arrange the families and try to, basically get it all organized with volunteers, et cetera, collect the money. And we'd show up and we'd be doing that. Since I was a florist, I would show up with my wrapping paper and we'd wrap up all the baskets. And then we'd personally deliver them to the families. And we always prayed for no rain and nice weather, et cetera. And then about maybe 6 years ago, he went to California. And one of our other people that used to volunteer took over for about a year. And then the following year, in 2011, I get a phone call from this guy, Frank, who's also worked on the Basket Brigade, and said, we have 3 weeks. Let's put a Basket Brigade together. And it was, okay, we will. So in 3 weeks' time, we were able to collect enough money to do 150 baskets, 75 in Queens and 75 up here in Westchester. And,
that is incredible.
And 3 weeks' time, we were up all hours of the night. And then from that point, luckily, I was able to find the school that my kids went to school with, and we were able to get an inside place. So we were able to store the food the night before and, make sure we didn't have to deal with the elements on Sunday when we made our deliveries. And every year, it kind of grew. The year of Hurricane Sandy, we sent 100 baskets out to Rockaways, and we did 100 baskets up here. And then finally last year we did 275 baskets, and the joke was, let's do 500, and guess what? We're doing 500 this year. So
that is fantastic. So it is just growing by leaps and bounds.
Yes. We are working at three locations this year out of Brooklyn and Brownsville, and a location in Jackson Heights in Queens, and of course our Westchester location, which is our original location.
Wow. So, Anna, tell me a little bit about what is the history, the overall history of the Basket Brigade?
Well, originally, the Basket Brigade is actually done all over the United States, all on that same weekend before Thanksgiving. And it basically started with a lot of us are Tony Robbins, students, and we've gone to seminars, et cetera. And Tony Robbins had a dream that this should be done all over, because basically he tells the story during the seminars that when he was younger, they weren't doing that well, and his stepfather went to the door, and basically somebody knew that they needed some food and extra stuff to help him through the holiday, and his father was too proud of the man and kind of slammed the door in the person's face, and Tony kind of vowed to help out people. He knew the need was there. And so when he was very young, I think 19 or something like that, he decided to start doing baskets and stuff and started helping people out. And obviously, as he became more famous and stuff, They have what they call the Anthony Robbins Foundation, and basically they're grassroots that, you know, take and do Basket Brigade all over the country, and we feed millions of people. And
wow.
Each area, each location does their own thing. They kind of organize it themselves, and, you know, we do a great thing all over the country.
That's amazing. Now, we have listeners, I know that you and I are both based out of the New York City and Westchester area, but there are listeners throughout the world. How would someone find out if there's a Basket Brigade in their area?
Well, hopefully if they can Google it online and stuff and find out what's going on, or sometimes they can call the foundation, the Tony Robbins Foundation, and they may be able to tell them if they know of anything in their area. And, you know, hopefully they'll get that information through them.
That's great. And how many years have you been involved directly with the Basket Brigade? That was 3 years, you said?
Well, no, directly as trying to organize it, it's been about since 2011. So I've been doing that 5 years, organizing it with Frank and other people. But historically, it goes back long, long, long time ago because, as I said, I used to bring my kids at 32 and 28, and I brought them as, 12 and 13-year-olds. I brought them with me to deliver baskets to the South Bronx. And guess what? They're helping me at 32 and 28. They're going to be at the Basket Brigade on Saturday helping me out as usual.
That's fantastic, and especially to implement that something like that at such a young age. I'm sure that it really gives them an understanding and value of what they're giving and how they're helping people.
Right, and that's why a lot of we encourage the volunteers to bring their families because, again, they want their families, the kids, to experience, you know, Westchester is a pretty nice area. I mean, most of the areas, but we do have poor sections in Westchester also. And some of these kids are very sheltered, and some of the volunteers and parents want to expose their kids to realize that they are lucky and that there are people that do have needs, and it's a great opportunity for them to do that. And we have an activity for the kids also, so when they show up, they paint, they color, they put stickers on the boxes, they help decorate it. Some of them last year made little hearts and put notes in the baskets, so it's kind of a family thing, so it's always a great thing.
Oh, that's fantastic. And tell me, behind the scenes, what's involved in setting up a Basket Brigade each year?
Oh, well, where shall I begin? Well, first thing is you have to find a place that's willing to take and host you, you know, because since, as I said, we do so many, we have to have a place to store it the night before. So logistically, you need a place, obviously, number one. The second thing is once you get the place, you explain to them what you're doing, then it's a matter of getting the word out and making, you know, collecting the money and stuff like that, and make sure you have enough money to cover the cost of the baskets. And, you know, you have to, it's kind of a balancing act. Then you also have to find out organizations that have needs. And so you try to accommodate them. Obviously, there's a great need this year. We've seen it grow, the need, from year to year. There's one organization we were given 50 baskets to, and now we're up to over 100 in the matter of like 2 years or so, 2-3 years. So it's just a matter of balancing the finances and balancing the families that have needs and then trying to match the two. And then luckily about 2 years ago we were able to get a sponsor from Fresh Direct that was able to help us out, so our cost went down because we were able to feed more families. That's how come we were able to do 275 last year, because we did have voluntary donations of the food. So they give us canned products, they give us apples, potatoes, yams. It's just incredible how, you know, once you get the ball going, it just snowballs bigger and bigger. So, you know, last year we asked for 250 loaves of bread, and this year we asked for 500, and we got them both years, you know. Last year we asked for, you know, 250, cans of corn, and we got them, and this year we're getting, you know, just as much. So we're covering all our costs and stuff. So that's a wonderful thing. And all our all the people that are on the board, you know, Frank and Seamus. Seamus is great in collecting money. I just picked up some money from him tonight. And, you know, the more money we have, the more people we can feed. So that's our goal, is to feed as many people as we can. We're going to definitely do over 2,000 people this year to feed. So, and then just, you know, coordinating all the volunteers and making sure that, you know, that's all done. We have a website. We finally got ourselves so organized that we have a website that people could go on, NYC Basket Brigade, and you can go on there and you can donate or you can volunteer. And then from behind the scenes, you know, you have to keep track of all your volunteers, who's volunteering, how much money you're getting in. And you have to kind of monitor that on a daily basis so that, you know, things change. As I said, they're all moving pieces, and you got to make sure that it all works out at the end.
It sounds like it's so much coordinating. I'm impressed by how you can put all of this together. When do you start planning for this activity?
Well, this year we kind of started earlier. As I said, the first year, 2011, we did it in 3 weeks, but many, many hours until 3 o'clock in the morning. This year, we started earlier. We started probably around maybe in the summer, late summer and stuff like that. Again, it's very hard to get people excited in July about Thanksgiving. So, you know, that kind of like, people don't think of that. They think of vacation. They think of school. They think, so really, even though we try to plan and try to do as many things as we possibly can, like, you know, logistically getting a place, and we also have to deal with supermarkets. We deal with Costco. You know, we have to go there, and we have to talk to people there and things like that. So we start early, but then start September, that's where the crunch time begins, you know, preparing our flyer, distributing our flyer, getting it online and things like that. You know, going to, we ask all our volunteers to take and print the flyers and give them out to their local restaurants and, you know, their dry cleaners, wherever they frequent, and post it up on, you know, their windows and leave flyers for them, people to pick up. And, you know, again, it's all donations that makes us go. So the more we get the word out there, you know, put it on social media, send it to their friends, family, whatever, talk it up. I went this year to go vote, and I was talking to this policeman, and he hands me $50. So, you know, it's just a matter of, like, you know, just getting the word out there, and that's where we need our leaders and, you know, the people that are actually running it, and then volunteers. I mean, we ask people if they can't volunteer, then we ask them to, you know, just take the flyer and post it up around their neighborhood. So that's how the word gets out. And we got a donation. 1 year we got a donation from Switzerland. This year we got a donation from Michigan. So
wow.
I think we got California. We got one from Canada this year. So we don't know where they come from sometimes, but obviously, you know, it's that old advertisement. Two people tell two people tell two people, and the word just spreads. So.
Absolutely. I can only imagine that with feeding 2,000 families, there must be quite a few volunteers that are helping you coordinate all of this. How many volunteers do you have each year or this year in particular, that you're working with?
Well, this year, in the past, when we started 2011, it was just Frank, myself, and this girl, Christina, out in Queens. So it was three of us.
Wow.
As I said, we did 150 baskets.
Wow.
And then, you know, those are the organizers, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This year, we were lucky enough to have other people that were involved, and we, obviously, Amanda, you're involved in it, too.
Mm-hmm.
We have this girl, Jennifer, that's also involved out in Brooklyn. We have Barbara that's involved out in Brooklyn. They're actually working on obtaining the family information and stuff like that. We have Albert also working out in Brooklyn and in Queens, and he's trying to coordinate both places. We have David, who is our accountant in residence. David's been doing the Basket Brigade probably as long as I have, for about 20 years. He was out in the streets also. David, basically, I do a lot of the accounting and deposits and stuff like that, and then David takes and files our taxes, so he's involved in that. Of course, let's not forget Frank, who's up here in Westchester, who started with me, you know, back in 2011. I just don't want to forget anybody. Then we have also Joseph, who's also been involved in it many, many years, that helped out a few years back in Queens also. Am I forgetting anybody, Amanda? I'm just trying to think.
I think that sounds like it's everyone.
And of course, we have our most famous person that started with us last year. he started with Fresh, he works with Fresh Direct, and he started and he was able to get us a lot of our donations last year. And of course, this year he's helping out again, so which is Michael, which is like we are eternally grateful to him, because if it wasn't for him, you know, we couldn't pull this. And this year he asked for turkeys from a particular company, and we got chickens instead, which is not a problem. We're going to take and utilize our 500 chickens and distribute them to some of our soup kitchens. So it's not only delivering to the families, but helping out some of the other organizations. Any of our leftover food and stuff like that, we bring it up here to White Plains, to Open Arms, which is another soup kitchen and shelter for homeless people. So we try to cover all our bases. And then, of course, then are the people who volunteer year after year that actually come and help us. And they just, you know, come at the end. But they're very important because, again, without them we can't get all these baskets assembled, and without them we can't make all the deliveries that we have to make, because we do deliver personally as many as possible to our families. And we do have a great moving company, Santiago, from, I guess they're out in Nyack someplace, and they help us with a truck, and they actually deliver some baskets to the Bronx to, like, group locations, and mm-hmm. been wonderful for several years. So, you know, it takes a lot of, as I say, it takes a lot of people in the village to raise a child, and that's basically what we do.
Phenomenal. How many people usually do you have at each location per year?
Well, last year we had to turn people away. We had over 100 up in Westchester, and mm-hmm. just physically the space couldn't hold it. I mean, we were able to get 275 baskets done from, let's say, about 10 o'clock. We were done by 2 o'clock, and people were out and starting to make deliveries around 2:30, 3 o'clock. So we're organized enough that we've done it enough times that we're able to get ourselves set up on Friday. We have volunteers coming in on Friday to pick up the food from Costco and stuff, and then help us set up tables and set up the trays. We give them trays. We really don't give them baskets so they can cook their turkeys in. And we set all that up on Friday night, so when more volunteers come on Saturday, we just knock the cans out and put them all up and line them up and get them in those baskets and wrap them up, seal them, and, you know, get them all ready. And everybody loves making the personal drives to people's families and actually delivering those baskets. So this year we look like we have about 50 to 60 volunteers up in Westchester. Looks like we may have somewhere around maybe 25 to 30 maybe in Brownsville in Brooklyn. And the location that we're working with in Jackson Heights has their own volunteers, and they probably have about over 100 volunteers, if not more.
So there's a lot of people involved in this. Do you have enough people this year, or are you still looking for more volunteers?
We can probably use a few more up in Westchester and in Brooklyn. Really, Brooklyn probably needs some. But, yeah, we definitely can use a few more volunteers. Again, you need to go to NYC Basket Brigade and click on the donation or the volunteer flag up on top, and we can definitely use a few more hands if we can.
Great. And in general, what are some areas that volunteers help you with? What does it look like the day of the event? What are some things that volunteers are doing besides the deliveries? What else is involved?
Well, if anybody walks in, they think chaos is happening, but it really, really, really is very well organized. We kind of have a meeting. We kind of do a sample basket. We show all the people a sample basket, and then basically we get captains to do different things. So we ask for volunteers, and who's going to handle the corn? You know, two cans of corn go in something, or, you know, who's going to be handling the other products, you know, the string beans, the peas, whatever. So each of them have their own little group, and basically when they take and have that group of people, they start and work on that part of the basket. So each one, it's almost like an assembly line. So we have everything mm-hmm. lined up, and then people just go down the line and put in their product and put in their product, and then we double-check, make sure nothing is left out. So it's organized chaos. And then we have the people who do the produce, and that's the most interesting part. It's like they got to pick and choose the yams, and, you know, everybody gets three or four yams or something like that. you know, 3 pounds of potatoes, apples. So they put them all in little plastic bags. And at the end of the whole thing is, like, we have one large box that contains all the camp products, cake mixes, juice packs for the kids, hot chocolate, and a note from us. And that's sealed up. And then we have the smaller box that has the produce and the bread, and that's sealed up. And then, of course, we have the turkey. So each family gets 3 items. So the people are all doing that. And then we have a kitchen crew that feeds the volunteers and makes sure that we're well-fed and, you know, hydrated and everything else, because these people volunteer their time from 9 o'clock in the morning, and we work all day, and then they go out and make deliveries, and some of them don't get home until 6, 7 o'clock at night after they make the delivery. So it's a long day for the volunteers. But they all love it, and they all keep on coming back.
That's amazing. What about as far as special services? I know that I'm sure that you have photographers or things that coordinate. Are there any other things besides that people offer their services for? I know you mentioned a moving company earlier.
Yes, Santiago comes from Rockland County, and they help us out. We had our local news come last year, and they did a little story on us, which was nice, which is also on our website, so anybody can review it and stuff like that. So that's kind of nice. You know, once or twice we had a newspaper article. I mean, I wish we would have more publicity, more on the upfront side, so that we can do the collection, stuff like that. It's almost kind of anticlimactic at the end, you know, to take and have it covered. But, you know, we've had coverage in the past, and that's basically what we do. I think Frank does a press release that goes out. But as far as, you know, with social media and stuff, hopefully we can get more stuff out this year.
Fantastic. And with the volume that you have with 500 families, how do you coordinate delivery with the volunteers going to all these different families? What does that look like?
Well, basically, I'm actually working on that tonight. And basically, I contact all the agencies. I ask them to send me a list, and I review it with each agency. And basically, what you're looking at is, like, what's the construction of the family? You know, how many people in that family? There's one agency that has, you know, 12 people in the family. Obviously, we have to give them 2 turkeys and 2 baskets, you know, to feed everybody. So we have to analyze that with each of the agencies that we deal with. Once you get that organized, we obviously have their addresses. Hopefully, we have a phone number. And on the list is how many turkeys they get and how many baskets they get. And then I consolidate all the agencies together. And once we do that, I basically sort by zip code and then go down the list and say, okay, you know, these 4 or 5 baskets are going all in the same zone, because we don't want our volunteers going from Yonkers to Mount Vernon to, you know, the Bronx. So I basically sort it by zip code and break that down, and then give the volunteers, put it in an envelope and say, okay, these 4 families, I need somebody to go to Yonkers. I need these people to go to Mount Vernon. I need these people to go to New Rochelle. And the volunteers at the end are more than excited. Some of them get disappointed because they don't raise their hands fast enough. And, you know, they take their baskets and they take their families and they load up their car and then they start making their deliveries. But that's how you basically coordinate it, because you need to, you know, maybe centralize it. Many years ago, we used to use Google Map to send a volunteer, and there'd be one guy that'd sit there all day trying to do the Google Map for people. But thank God for GPS. We don't have to worry about that anymore.
Modern times are helping.
Right. But, again, we try to centralize the family so these people are not running all over the place and do it that way.
And with the baskets, how much does it cost to feed a family?
With the turkey flu and everything, the turkeys went up a little bit. I say it's depending what we get. We give them quite a bit in the basket. I mean, we try to give them from soup to nuts, literally. And I know it costs us roughly between 43 or something per basket. Again, every year it went up. But turkeys used to be 99 cents a pound. Now they're up. Some places, one year it was $1.89 a pound. So it kind of varies. And it kind of, you know, if we can get a discount on something, we try to get a discount. But that's probably the range, you know. So, and of course, things go up year after year, so that's why we, you know, we need more and more money as we go along. But
sure.
Roughly, that's the amount.
So, are you able to share how much you've raised in the past, in the previous years, or how you're doing this year so far?
This year, we've raised close to, as of right now, we have about, you know, 16, I mean, money's still coming in. I just picked up some money today, so that number might be going up by tomorrow. Right now, we have about 16,000, but we're hoping that money to go up as soon as I finish counting money and depositing and stuff like that and check our online donations, and that gets transferred over and stuff. So hopefully we'll hit the 20,000 mark maybe this, you know, this year.
That's amazing.
Yeah. In the past, as I said, we first had to get our money in first and then decide how many families we can feed. And we kind of like, we averaged it out, you know, to be $50 a basket, just on an average, to make it simple math. So the year we collected $5,000, we said, okay, figure an average of $50 a basket, more or less. It came out to be, you know, we can do 100 baskets this year. And because we've had donations of the food from Fresh Direct and different sources. Oh, we also have Jason Karp, who's able to get us cake mixes and brownie mixes. Like, you know, 1 year we have to buy it, and now we don't have to buy it. He's been able to give it to us. Newman's Own has given us coupons for cookies. So, you know, it cuts down the cost of the baskets, and we can feed, as I said, more people. So, it's just amazing how things open up from year to year.
As you've seen it grow each year and it's gotten a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger, have you thought about what the goals are for next year?
Well, Frank's whispering in my ear, 800.
800 families.
That's whispering in my ear. And I said to Frank, quote, unquote, let's get through this year. When he whispered 500 to me last year, I like, you are crazy. Well, as I said, here
it's
we
happening.
Are.
It's happening.
So I don't know. You know. It depends how we do in our locations, because we're using some new locations this year. We have to see what challenges we're going to meet. Can it accommodate more? Do we need to look at new locations? So there's a lot of factors we have to look at before we jump to the 800 number, but as I said, I didn't think 500 was possible last year, but, you know, we're doing it.
It's happening. And are you still taking donations for this year now?
We are, and you know what? We'll take it to the bitter end, because even on the day of the event, people will come in and donate. 1 year we were over at in Hartsdale Sacred Heart, and there was CCD classes going on. And we actually had, it was the cutest thing. I had one father, he took his two kids, gave them both the 20, and they walked over to me and gave me $40. So, you know, it was so sweet. So we will take money to the bitter end. But as I said, we have to pay all our expenses this year. And once we do that, then when we have leftover, at least we have something to start with next year. And so any money we have, you know, maybe we will meet that 800 people next year because we have a little extra cash left over after we pay all our expenses this year. You know, we have to pay for all the turkeys. 500 turkeys are not cheap.
So, yeah, I can imagine. So anything that you have that's a surplus, then it just rolls over into the following year.
Yeah. Yes. We definitely use it. And I remember there was 1 year we had left over. We had about $1,800 left over with Frank. And that was, I think, 2011. And what we winded up doing is, you know, now we're a 501c corporation, but at the time it was just us three individuals, Christina, Frank, and myself. And so when we winded up with the extra money, we winded up with $1,800 extra at the end. We took those $1,800, divided it to three organizations, and gave them a check for $600 so they can get stuff for their people for Christmas. So that's what we did in the past.
That's amazing.
So the money didn't go to waste.
That's amazing. You had mentioned that you're a 501(c) now. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, a few years back, we applied for it, and we were trying to make it, you know, so people can take a tax-free, you know, donation. And we wanted to legitimize ourselves, I guess, a little bit better. And so we did apply for it, and we went through all the paperwork and all the nonsense that you have to go through, and paid our fees and everything. And so we are an official organization now that's a 501(c). So that was very exciting to us because, you know, it kind of makes us more legitimate, I guess. They don't, you know, people don't give money to nobody, you know, or, you know, some people are skeptical. Well, who are you? And, you know, things like that. So kind of puts a better stamp on us, a more official stamp.
Somewhat of a credential now, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Great. And you mentioned quite a few companies that have gotten involved through the donation process. What are ways that companies, new companies that come to you, can get involved? How would that process look?
Well, I guess if they contact us and they let us know that they're interested in donating items, that's wonderful. Obviously, the items, you know, we're looking for, I mean, like, we're not looking for clothes donations. Please don't send us clothes. I mean, you know, there are places that need it. But we really focus in on the food. So, you know, we use the canned soup, canned, you know, corn, canned whatever, peas, string beans, stovetop stuffing, all those items that you typically think of a Thanksgiving dinner, those are the items that we're really interested in getting. And obviously the more we get, the better off we are because we can feed more families and more families. So if we get a donation, you know, and we try to get, like this year, like, as I said, most of the canned products, we need 2 cans of everything. So we've gotten 1,000 cans, and we've gotten 1,000 cans, and we've gotten 1,000 cans. So, you know, we do not accept, because of physically we can't store it, we do not accept, like, food donations. We don't accept the food donations. We accept food donations from a corporation that can bring it to us on that last day because we physically don't have a space. That space is only available to us that we use is only for 24 hours. So we only use it from Friday to Saturday. And so we have to bring the food in all on Friday, and then we got to get it out by Saturday because we don't have a house, per se. We're borrowing somebody's facilities. So, you know, that's why we can't really – we don't have a warehouse to collect this like a food bank or something like that. That would be different. And the other thing is we also don't collect food donations because then we'd have to check expired dates, and then it's more of a work process. So we'll go into one place, let's say Costco or whatever, and we'll say, okay, like I went tonight, 44 cases of, you know, juice for the kids, you know, boxed juices. So they will pull those out for us on Friday. We pick it up on Friday. We distribute it on Saturday, and we deliver it on Saturday. So, you know, but if organizations want to give us the bulk stuff and they can cooperate with us and deliver it to us, you know, when we need it, you know, but we can't store things. That's the only bad thing.
Okay. And if a business wanted to get involved, is there a certain person that they should reach out to, or what was the best way of contact be?
I guess we do have a Gmail account. We have a volunteer Gmail account. I believe we have another account, but I definitely know we have the volunteer account, and that's NYC. Hold on here. I should have it. I should have it memorized. But it's actually on our website.
Oh, it is. Okay.
I believe it's on our website, but I will double-check on that, and I'll get back to you on that once I check it.
Okay, sure. Oh, yeah, I have it right here. New York City, it's NYCBB Volunteers.
Volunteers,
yeah.
That's it.
At gmail.com.
Yeah, NYCBB Volunteers at gmail.com.
Great.
And so if they go into that and they write to us, we will pick up on that and then respond to that.
Fantastic. And tell me, in your experience, because you've been doing this for quite some time, what do you think are some tips for anyone maybe that wanted to do this themselves? What would you say leads to a successful event? What would be your top tips?
My top tip, 110% dedication. If you're not dedicated to this, because it, let me tell you, it's many hours of planning, many hours of coordinating, many hours of logistics. It's really a logistics nightmare when you think about it. I mean, obviously, the bigger you get, the bigger the headache.
Right.
But they have to be totally committed. They have to be very detail-oriented because you don't want to miss anything out. If you miss it, you don't have time to – there's no replays in here, okay? You have to be a good planner. You have to know all your pieces. You have to know where all your pieces fit. And once you get all the pieces together, it has, it's like a well-oiled machine. You know, if the gears are not there, you know, the machine will break. So it just, you have to have somebody that's really going to be dedicated and see this thing through, because it can get very frustrating. You have to have somebody with a lot of perseverance and a lot of dedication, really, you know, that's going to do this.
I can only imagine what it takes. I've had a brief window of time looking at it, and I'm just amazed at everything that I see come together in the short time that I've been working with you in the event.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's crazy.
It's crazy, an understatement.
Crazy is an understatement. Let's put it this way. This Saturday and Sunday I was here at work till 2 in the morning, both days, just trying to put all the pieces together, and that's what you have to do. You have to be a person that can focus and, you know, say, hey, we're working on this piece. I'm working on families on Saturday, so let me get all my pieces of the families. I have any questions? And I was calling these agencies at 7:30, 8 o'clock on Saturday. They're not even working, but I have their, you know, their personal cell numbers. And I said, hey, what's the story with this family? I mean, one of the girls, I think she was working so hard on it, the woman from the Bronx, that she had a family of six she was giving four turkeys to. And I'm like, Sandra, do you want to take a look at your numbers again? You know, it's like you're giving four 10-pound turkeys, 12-pound turkeys to six people? I don't think that's going to work out. So, you know, she'd had to go back and she had to redo her list and stuff like that. And then, you know, you have to redo it until you get it all right. And then she was giving too many baskets out, and we don't even have enough baskets. She was 50 baskets over our limit. So it's a lot of, like, back and forth, and that's why you need somebody with patience and detail and perseverance.
I can only imagine. Tell me, how do you engage the volunteers on the day of the event?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that question.
Sure. How do you engage the volunteers on the day of the event? What are some tips that you can give in engaging volunteers?
Engaging volunteers in the sense of, like, getting them involved and stuff like that?
Yeah, and maybe building the team and, the excitement.
Well,
and
yeah, well, basically what we do is first we feed them, so that's always important. So they're nice to us because we fed them. Well, actually, we actually have all the volunteers that come in register with us. We give them their name tags, make sure we get their information so we can contact them in the future. That's very important for us to gather that information. A lot of them are repeat performers. They keep on coming back year after year, so we know a lot of these people. And, you know, they spread the word. They bring their sisters. They bring, you know, and it keeps on going. So once they come in there, we try to feed them. And, of course, they're strangers. And we try to do, like, a group exercise with them and stuff like that, give them a little bit of information. I mean, some of them are first-timers. Some of them are not. So the ones who are not hear it from us more than once, and we just kind of try to explain to them what we do, what our purpose is for that day, and we'll play something like a name game or something like that where people go around and they know each other's names, and we'll try to do a little play game with the names and stuff. So we got to try to get people first to know each other and things like that. And then as people get to know each other, then, you know, when we do the team, you know, and break them down to smaller team, they kind of work with each other. So they get to know each other on a different level, a more personal level. And then sometimes they go crossways to another team because one team might finish, and then they'll help out another team that's behind and stuff like that. So they kind of engage within themselves. But we try to, you know, do the introduction and let them understand. And if they have any questions or anything like that, that's what we do. And then, you know, once the work is done, we try to gather them again and either play another game with them before they go out and, you know, just give them words of encouragement, kind of go over things that have to be done. We sometimes have what we call our bonus baskets. We explain to them what bonus baskets are, and if they have to deliver a bonus basket, what they need to do. So, you know, everybody by the end of the day, they're kind of like, everybody's like, you know, talking and friendly, and some of them have made connections and they network, and, you know, so it's kind of nice to see that.
You mentioned a bonus basket. What's the bonus basket?
Well, the bonus baskets are every once in a while when we finish doing our list and we have everybody loaded up their cars and stuff like that, we may have a couple of baskets left over. And so we ask the volunteers who wants to take a bonus basket. And, of course, everybody loves the bonus baskets because basically what you do is you go and deliver your baskets, and then when you're either at some point in the beginning or probably the end, you ask that person you delivered that last basket to, do you know a family that really, really, really can use some food? And guaranteed dollars to donuts, they know someone. And those people were not on our radar. Those are the surprise baskets. And we will, you know, I had an experience one year. We tried to deliver to this family, and there was nobody there, nobody there. We couldn't get through, So we don't want to take the basket home with us, obviously. And so there was two families we had to deliver on this floor. And the first family was there, but the second family, nobody was answering the bell. We tried knocking and things, nothing. And we do not leave, because of the areas that we work in, we do not leave the baskets on the front door. So unfortunately, that family did not get it. And we asked that first family we delivered to, is there anyone? She goes, well, there's a lady with three children down the hall. She really can probably use food. And when we walked in, their faces just light up because they didn't expect us. They didn't even know we were coming. And those were the most rewarding baskets because the other people do know we're coming and they're asked to be home, you know, at certain times so we can make the deliveries. And those are really bonuses for us and them.
I can remember before I started with the basket brigade, I had done something with my church. And something similar, I remember donating to a family. And it was a large family ranging from a newborn child up to a grandmother in the house. I think we had about 11 or 12 people living in the house.
Wow.
And it was one of the coldest winters I remember. They had no heat. They had no electricity. And we actually did it Thanksgiving morning when I was at my church. So we were able to give them hot food. And when I got to the door and I saw them, and I realized how bundled up they were and how cold they were inside the house, it just brought tears to my eyes because they had no idea that we were coming. And just seeing the look on their face, this was years ago. This was probably at least 10 years ago, and it was something I'll never forget.
Right. That's where it all comes together and makes all this hard work worthwhile. You see those faces. There's a woman that I delivered to here in Greenberg that I've been delivering to her for years. And she's a grandmother, and she's on my list this year. And the past 2 years I was not able to deliver to her, but this year I will make it a point to deliver to her. And I remember she knows that I go back every year. She actually had a thank you card for me when I got there. So, you know, those are the moments that you want your volunteers to experience. I mean, there's some people who are best and run, but, you know, there's certain times when you have those moments that kind of are special.
Is there, would you say that woman was probably your greatest experience through the years, or do you have any other particular experience that really stands out to you?
There was another woman not too far from her that I delivered to, and she had some kids, and I kind of watched them growing up, and she was trying to get herself together, and she was trying to go to college, and she said to me, she says, I'm going to be graduating, I want you to come to my graduation. So that was kind of like, ooh. You know, that was a little, you know, taken back by that, but I guess, you know, it's important for them. Sometimes you don't realize what an impact you're making when you are delivering these baskets.
Yeah, sometimes it's more than just the food itself, but what it symbolizes.
Not the basket,
it symbolizes the hope.
Not the basket.
And, yeah.
It's not the
hope, it's the second chance, it's the possibilities, it's that someone believes in them. What is, through the years, you know, you've been doing this for some time.
Amanda, just let me share with you this. In segue to what you're saying is, this is the note that goes in the baskets, and it basically says, this comes from someone who cares about you. All we ask is that you take care of yourself well enough to be able to do it for someone else someday.
Mm.
And that note goes into each basket in both Spanish and in English. And basically what we ask these people to do is, you know, you're here in a situation right now, and hopefully you won't, you know, be here for too long, and hopefully when you get to a place, you know, you do it. It's pay forward. And as a matter of fact, before I came here, I spoke to our person who we do New Rochelle with in Bernard School, and she called me up. She said, listen, I got a phone call from this woman that her kids are now 20 years old. Now, she works, she's a social work and stuff. She worked in kindergarten, that area, that age group. And she says she's a woman that called her up. And she says, listen, I remembered several years ago I got a basket from you guys. Are you guys still doing it? Can I send you a check? And so she said to her, she says, well, we are still doing it, but send the check to the New York Basket Brigade. So now I'm waiting for a check from this woman who 20 years ago, whatever, got a basket from us. And now they're sending us money.
Wow. So it shows the impact that it's making on people. They never forget.
No, no. Tony didn't forget. Tony Robbins.
Yeah.
So
he's
paying it forward in his own way. You know, and he has us all organized to be his little soldiers, to be out there to accomplish what he wants to accomplish, and that's what we're doing.
It's amazing. With the years that you've been coordinating this event, and I'm sure you've seen so many different things and experienced so much, what does this event provide for you personally? Maybe from the time that you got started way back in the beginning up till now, what does it give you personally?
Well, personally, I have a phrase that I tell my kids all the time, and I'm drilling it into their heads. And the phrase is, if you can't help somebody when they need help, when are you going to help them?
Hmm.
So from my own personal philosophy is, there's people there that need help, and I'm going to be there to help them, no matter what I have to do.
And what drives you to keep going? How do you keep that energy up and that focus and those 2 and 3 a.m. nights? What's your secret?
I don't think about it. I try to be like the energy bunny. I just keep going and going and going. There's years that Frank yells at me because I've been up all night. I had not gone to bed. I just had time to go home at 7:30 in the morning, take a quick shower, and show up at 8 o'clock at the place. And, you know, I go through the whole day, and then I crash. So I guess it's the focus. It's the focus of knowing that it has to get done, and it has to get done. That's it. Pull out all the stops to get it done, no matter what.
Yeah.
Again, that's why I said to you, you need somebody with 100%, 110% dedication, somebody who's going to be perseverant, somebody who's going to, you know, to get it done. I mean, I don't want to, you know, scare people off, but, you know, you have to have people that are definitely committed.
It's not something that you're just going to do on a whim.
Yeah, it's not something, that would be nice to do. They don't realize all the stuff that's involved in it. It's just, you know, they're looking at it from the surface. And when you really get down and peel away all the levels, there's a lot of, as I said, logistics, coordination. You got to be personable. You got to get in touch with all of these, you know, agencies and things like that. And you can't let it stop you. You know, one of the agencies we worked with disbanded and stuff like that. I said, oh, well, they disbanded, but that doesn't make a difference. I'm going to go to the individual because there were different agencies and they collected all the information for us. Now I had to go to the individual ones and get the information. So it meant more work for me before I got it from one source, but now it's more work. You can't let it hold you back. You got to just keep going. You just say, okay, not a problem. This is not a problem. It's just a challenge. And you meet that challenge head on and you'll get it accomplished.
You shared so much amazing information with me tonight, and I know that this time is really valuable as we wrap up close to the last few days before the event. And I appreciate you so much for taking the time to share all of this great information and knowledge with me this evening and for our listeners. Is there any final takeaways or messages or anything that you would like to share with anyone?
Well, if your little heart is telling you to do something, then you should follow your heart. If it says to make a donation, you should make a donation. It doesn't have to be a big one. You can do a $20 donation. You know, it doesn't matter what you do. But as long as you do it, it'll make you feel better. And that's like an easy thing. If you can't do it financially, then, you know, help us with the flyers. Print a flyer. Print a couple of flyers. Bring them to your store. You know, anything that your heart is telling you, you should do it. If it tells you to volunteer, then go online and volunteer. You know, it's follow your heart, really. And because, you know, if you follow your heart and you listen to that gut, you'll be so much a happier person.
Mm. I think that goes through without saying for probably multiple aspects of your life.
It's a life philosophy. It's a life philosophy, not only for this. But, you know, I think people are so focused in on so many stupid things nowadays, they really don't stop to listen to themselves. And to listen what their inner voice is saying. There's so much outside stimulation and stuff like that that it's drowning out the person's inside voice. And I think that's where you need to focus, is what is your heart and soul saying to you.
That is so true. I was just sharing with someone yesterday. I had a few years ago, I had traveled to Jamaica. And it's something that I do pretty much almost every year. I just really love the culture and the country. And I remember I had stayed at a friend's house at my first half of the trip. So first night there, it was 5 o'clock in the morning, and somebody was outside singing and whistling as they walked down the street. So, of course, as a New Yorker, I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, please stop, be quiet. Why? It's 5 in the morning. I want to sleep. I'm on vacation. And I was so frustrated. By the second day, I wake up again, 5 in the morning. I hear him whistling, singing, and I'm like, oh, come on, 2 days in a row, I just want to sleep. And I'm so frustrated by him singing. By the third day, I woke up, and I said, okay, so obviously this is going to be every morning. So I was kind of starting to get used to it. By the fourth day, I said, you know, who am I to be upset by him singing and whistling? He's obviously, he's happy, he's on his way to work, he's appreciating, you know, he's making the best of what it is, and I'm sure that he doesn't have much, but he's making the most of it. Uh-huh. And by the fifth day, I was actually looking forward to it, and I woke up and I heard him whistling and singing, and my mindset was completely different because I'm thinking, okay, you know, what do I need to be grateful for? How do I change my outlook? You know, and, you know, I'm sure that I'm in a better position, but yet he's up and he's singing and he's whistling and just loving life. And it kind of just taught me a lesson to kind of slow down and just appreciate the little things and be more grateful. And I think it's kind of similar to this.
Right. And he's probably out there looking at the sunrise, enjoying the sunrise. How many of us actually get up to watch a sunrise? And he probably does it in the morning. And it's such a joy for him to be there, be alive and have a job. You know, so all of that, you know, sometimes we don't look at prospectively. We don't look at other people. You don't want to look at other people's point of view. You know, you're not really appreciating where they're coming from. And so it's like what their actions are really not, you know, not what you think it is. You're putting your values on their actions. So that's basically what you learned over there.
No, it was just a huge life lesson, and this was years ago, and I'll never forget it. And it changed my perspective dramatically in more aspects than one.
So that's a great lesson.
Yeah. So, again, Anna, thank you so much for joining us today. And just another quick opportunity, if you could share the website one more time to the listeners if they're interested in volunteering or donating with the Basket Brigade.
Sure. It's NYC Basket Brigade.
Great. Thank you so much,
and
Anna.
If they Google it, it'll show up and just click into that, and they're in.
Okay. Great.
Thank you so much, Amanda, for this opportunity.
Oh, you're welcome. I appreciate your time.
Okay. Take care, then.
Have a great night. Bye-bye.
You too.